First of all, the stage that we're in now is a training ground for marriage. How I interact with my siblings is training how I'm going to interact when I'm married. And so I'm enjoying the training ground. I'm trying to learn all I can because the task, if the Lord would have me to marry, I definitely desire to marry. It's definitely a weighty task, raising immortal souls, and it's not something to be taken lightly. And so I want to learn all I can now. And I think a lot of people honestly are just in love with the idea, and they're not content now. So they think, like, we've kind of bought into the culture's lie of, like, all right, it's, you know, high school, college, marriage. And so, or, you know, trying to go anti the idea of, like, all right, career and then maybe marriage down the road. I think we're trying to kind of push, but we've almost pushed too far that, like, you're being holy if you're married, you know what I mean? Like, and then I think, like, we've gone into the other ditch on the other side. And so we need to be in the middle, in the happy medium.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Feminine Glory Podcast. I am one of the hosts of the Feminine Glory Podcast, and I am also joined by my co-host, Lydia Edmonds.
Hello, everyone.
We are going to be interviewing Lydia today, and we've got our hot tea and our water, and we are geared and ready to go. So let's do this. Lydia Edmonds is an ambitious woman whose gracious spirit encompasses everything she does. Known for her sharp wit and love of growing flowers, she crafts stunning floral bouquets straight from her garden and sells farm fresh eggs from her chickens, who she thinks have more personality than most people she meets. Which is kind of true.
Yes.
She isn't afraid of getting her hands dirty, and she firmly believes that life's better with a little mud on your boots and time to stop and smell the roses. She's also the co-host of this podcast and my sister, so Lydia, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So we are going to be interviewing Lydia, like I said, so we're going to dive straight into it. Lydia, what sparked your passion for working in the floral industry? Because you have your own company, as we mentioned in the past, Feathers and Florals Farmerette. So what kind of prompted that? The floral side.
Well, to be honest, I shocked myself with the turn I took into the floral industry, because I was not the type of person growing up where I was like wanted to get dirty. I was more like tutus and tiaras, like total princess. And so honestly, I shocked myself. Like, I was thinking back on it the other day, and I was like, kind of, how did I get here? Like, yeah, that's not where I thought my life would have gone when I was growing up. And so I think my dad honestly started cultivating that in me, as he would bring home flowers for mom, whether just to surprise her Mother's Day or her birthday, or whatever. When we got a bit older, he would be like, all right, girls, put an arrangement for me, like, you know, put it all together. And which is very, very generous on his part, because I'm sure it was really bad.
Like, yeah.
I'm sure we did a bad job. Just, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing. It's just kind of like, cut it, put it in a vase, whatever. And,
he didn't know, like, you have to cut it at an angle before you put it in the water.
And even looking back on things I've made, like, a year ago, I'm like, oh, I thought that was good. And it's not. Like, that's wow. And so he started that in me. And, of course, you know, I think there's a general appeal. Like, almost every woman loves flowers. And so that's probably part of it, too. But then as I started getting older, my mom began cultivating that also in me. We were renovating a house at the time, and we had gotten down to the studs in the renovation. And next thing I knew, a garden was in. Like, before we were in, we were midst of the renovation. Just this huge garden goes in.
Which, I mean, is not often the way you see people do it. Usually it's the other way around. You get in the house first before you decide to embark on a journey of a garden. But that was not the case.
No, yeah, and most of the time getting in the house is actually a hassle in and of itself.
So. It is, and so add on top of that. And, like, she's not kidding. Like, we had it down to the studs. Like, I mean, you could get on one side of the house and see right through the other side.
It was amazing.
A garden in the background.
It was a lot of work, but it was amazing at the same time. And we were doing it alongside some good friends of ours, and anyways, next thing I knew, a garden goes in, and that just kind of became a part of our normal routine, a part of our daily lives. You know, she suggested that you and I put in a flower patch, and so we did zinnias and sunflowers, and that just kind of became our thing. Like, every year when spring would come around, it's like, are we going to put our flower patch in the garden this time? And we actually sold some, you know, not when we were little, but as we started getting older, we did end up selling some, and it just became a tradition for us. And so we moved from that house. We were there for like 6 years. We moved, you graduated, and I had kept it up while you were off at work. And I still had a year or so left of school, but we were in summer break. And I had, as I said, continued doing the flowers, and I brought in a little arrangement to my mom. And she was like, you should make a business out of this. And I like didn't bat an eye. I was like, let's go for it. And that kind of kickstarted the deep dive into that.
Which is super funny because I don't know. I feel like now that you've started it and you're deep in it, it's always just kind of been like, oh, yeah, Lydia's always been a farmer. But that wasn't always the case. No. And guys, if I don't get in trouble about this, but Lydia, when she was younger, would like, it was tutus and tiaras, and she would wear a tiara every single day.
Yep.
Every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a bad day if that tiara ever got destroyed for whatever reason.
Wrecked my world.
But yeah, it's like even I remember I would be the one that would come and bring her a worm and be like, look at this, and she'd be like, ew, no, I'm not touching it.
Yeah.
At least not without gloves.
Oh yeah. No. Couldn't.
But it's just so funny to like look at you now and see how far you've come from that. You know what I mean?
It's shocking. It is.
I would have never pictured it.
But then you're right, it is almost like, but that's almost, it feels like it's always been me.
But it really I know. Hasn't, like, and now that you're in it, it's like, oh yeah, you know, that's just Lydia. She's the farmer of the family. But that was definitely not always the case. And so it's just really funny to see that transition into who you are now.
It's been a neat experience. Yeah.
That's awesome. Can you share the story behind the name Feathers and Florals Farmerette?
All right. Yes. So I wanted something I wanted the title to be something that encompassed every avenue of what I'm doing. And so obviously selling eggs, the chickens are a big part of how I grow flowers, how we garden here. And so I wanted something that encompassed all of that. Cause you know, 2020 came around and you kind of had supply chain issues. And then, people wanted kind of a solid place where they knew they could get like healthy food and they could be reliant upon something like they know, like, all right, I can come every week and I'm going to have eggs or meat or whatever. And so I wanted to kind of fill that gap in the community because we had chickens at the time. And as we've added to, you know, people found out, like, well, can I come get eggs from you? So I wanted to keep that up and sell eggs and bless the community that way. And then, of course, the flowers. And I wanted it to be from like seed all the way to selling. So I'd arrange it, put it together and sell it. So that's hence the feathers. I felt like that encompassed the egg side of things. And then the florals obviously encompassed the flowers. But Farmerette, you came up with, actually.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. You did. We had toyed around. Like,
go me then.
We were really loving the alliteration. And we had even toyed around with like some Latin too.
Yeah. I do remember that part.
And so, but you, I might've heard the word before. I don't know, but you, I think looked it up or something. And, I just kind of clicked. I loved it. And it's Farmerette is a term that became particularly popular around World War II. I believe it might have even been somewhat known during World War I, but I think it was particularly the Second World War. And it is a woman who is a farmer. And the more I've thought about it, I really love that kind of all that encompasses, because if you think back to that time, women had to step up in a big way. Like, the men were off fighting a war, and they had to step into many positions that they weren't normally going to do, and farming being one of them. And, like, if you think about the work ethic and the mindset they would have had to be like, the men are off fighting a war, and our job is very important. Like, we need to give them something to fight for, a home to come back to, and make it to where they can do their job faithfully, because if they know that the home is taken care of, they can go and defend the cause that they need to defend and do it dutifully as unto the Lord. And so I really just love that idea of like being about your business, have a good, solid work ethic, and then not, you know, moping around being sad for yourself. Obviously life was very hard at that time for a lot of people. But they had to have a mindset of doing more than just surviving. You had to thrive at the time. And I know across the board, not everyone was thriving, but giving them a cause to fight for, giving them something to fight for, and then something to defend that's worthwhile, and then a home to come back to. And I loved that. So the name just stuck from there.
That's awesome. No, and going back to what you were saying about not just surviving, but thriving. I think that's really important because, you know, it does something to a man when he's able to see the fruits of his labor.
Yes.
And so it's like, you know, this is what my day-to-day grind produces.
Yes.
Right? And it comes back to bless him, and it comes back because she's now given it back to him glorified. Mm-hmm. And now he can have that, take that energy and take that blessing and go on and pursue further excellence.
Right.
Because he's been able to see what the fruits of his labor have been producing. And it really does produce an overall joy and happiness and a thriving in the home for everyone in it.
Well, and it takes a bit of the pressure off, I guess, like allowing him to fulfill his mission easier. Like,
yep.
I understand there's still difficult things that come about. Obviously, fighting a war is not easy whatsoever. But knowing that, like, all right, I'll be fighting a war at home, you know,
yep.
I'll be planting flags and taking ground, and then, you know, I've got it covered. You can go do what you need to do, and come. And when you come back, it's going to be a place you can just settle back into. And although it would still have been hard during that time, but I think also it's applicable today in the fact that we're still in a culture war.
We are.
So it's like, you need to do what you need, you know, you need to make it easy that they can do their mission faithfully. Mm-hmm. And then they don't also have to come back and deal with a bunch of problems and,
yep.
you know, where you're needy and mopey and just be about your business, be planting flags at home while they're planting flags out in the culture, and bless your home, and then let that overflow into the community and start blessing people that way.
That's awesome. What first got you interested in raising chickens? So we talked about kind of the floral side of your business. Now let's talk about the chicken side. Like, what started that passion, Lids?
Okay. Well, it actually starts with ducks.
Okay.
So the house that we renovated, it was in a small town. And there was a park really close to our house. And there was a pond at said park where they kept ducks. And they would, like, add to, like...
Yeah, it was a lot of ducks. It wasn't, like, just, you know, a few.
Yeah,
there was a lot of different ones, a lot of different breeds, you know, male and female. They were just... I don't know who was in charge of picking them, but it was a lot of breeds.
So we would go and feed the ducks sometimes, but as we would go on walks through the town... We would feed them, and, you know, we were passing by the park all the time because it was on our way through our path that we would walk on. And one day our parents were taking a walk. We were at home doing something, and they saw the ducks. They're like, well, we'll go get the kids and we'll feed them today. And so they came and got us. We fed them, and these few in particular being, like, really, really friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're like, well, you know, they're being really nice today, whatever. So then we fed them, we went on our walk, and we went home. So the next day, I had, like, a babysitting commitment, I think.
Okay.
So I was up semi-early, which probably for my younger self was, like, 7 o'clock.
Back when life was so hard.
Yes. And I noticed something moving out in the front yard. So I came in my room and looked out the front door, and I noticed something was moving, but I couldn't tell what it was. I was like, oh my word, what is that? And so I walked to the front door, and 4 of the ducks from the park were in our front yard, just making themselves at home. So they had traveled from the park across a big field and up our gravel driveway into our front yard.
We still don't know why or how they even
found us.
Knew. It was like, and it wasn't like our property was, you know, very visible from the park. Like, our driveway went like up a hill, a gravel drive, and it was like there was our driveway had like 3 split roads. So it was one singular road, and then it would split into 3, and it would fork, and we were the one on the right, the far right. And then we had a bunch of wood right in front of us.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like we were very much hidden from the road.
Yeah.
And so the fact that the ducks and our house was already like a good distance from the park. Like, it was within walking distance, but it wasn't like, you know, again, it wasn't like you could see it from the park. Like, even if you were to cut down the woods in front of the house, it wasn't like you could see our house. And so the fact that they found us was like
remarkable,
insane.
So I went and got mom and whoever else was up at the time. I was like, y'all have to come see this. And so we then, of course, made the great mistake of feeding the ducks.
Mm-hmm.
We fed them challah, which is, you know, fancy Jewish bread. And the rest is history. They stuck around with us ever since. It was one male and three Peking ducks. And
just tell them the names.
Bob was the male. We had Bella, Rosita, and Ginger, who we called Gingy. And they laid eggs, and so we actually incubated some of their eggs and got more ducks from that.
Which Bob had a special demeanor about himself.
He looked like he needed like a top hat and a cigar, mm-hmm. like a little waistcoat situation. Yep. He was such a funny duck.
So stately.
But I just kind of, for whatever reason, stepped into like caretaker role for them. Like as they needed water, they needed food, I would just kind of be the person to do it. Like no one asked me to, but for whatever reason, I just like fell in love with it. And out of everyone, it just clicked with me for whatever reason. And so,
took to it like a duck to water.
Yes, I did.
Unintended.
But it was on one such occasion that they needed food. My dad, my younger brother, and I went to Tractor Supply, and it was probably like February or March, sometime around there, and they had chicks. And my dad says he had a weak moment at Tractor Supply. We got 6 chickens. And that kick-started that. The funny thing about the chickens, though, is that it was a 90% chance that it would be, like, all female. You're, like, 90% guaranteed that it would mm-hmm. all be female. We ended up with 3 roosters and 3 hens. So 90% went down to 50-50.
And, yeah, that sign wasn't entirely accurate.
But ever since then, we've gotten chickens either every year or every mm-hmm. other year since then. And so that experience just kick-started all of that.
So really quick. So you talked about the ducks and their names. I feel like you should just share just some of the names of your chickens because the people want to know.
Okay. So in the original batch, we had Cyrus, Louie, and Barney were the 3 roosters. And then the females were Big Mama, Cleopatra, and Betsy Ross. We also had, after that, we had a chicken named Hot Tamale. Because she had a really red beak. Then Wobbles.
Wobbles I'll share
Wobbles'
special.
Story coming up. Because, anyway. So, there's some of the chicken names for you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the chickens are so fun. And they each have their own little personality as well. Which
they
is
do.
Always interesting to witness.
Yeah, they're fun.
And they know you. They know you so well.
Yeah, you really do, in a funny way, build a relationship with them. You know, they're more intuitive, I think, than people give them credit for. So,
how would you describe your business's overarching mission? What's your goal with this company?
Well, mission statement, I guess, would be beautifying land and blessing others with the abundance from it. So, first and foremost, honoring the Lord in what I do. We as a family are big Dominion Mandate people. Genesis 1:28, which is then expounded upon in the Great Commission in Matthew. But being fruitful, multiplying, and then taking dominion of land. So one of our favorite things to do as a family is, like, as we've bought new homes, is to take the land, which oftentimes is not always kept up super well. Mm. But that's kind of the fun part of it, that you get to beautify that and take dominion of it. And you can see, like, each year how it gets better and better. And honestly, the animals are a big part of how we take dominion. Practicing, you know, regenerative agriculture. And so it would be that, just showing people how to take dominion on their own land and then ultimately blessing my family and then from that blessing the community around me and showing people, like, you can do what I'm doing, although it is difficult, but, like, I think more people need to get back to kind of, you know, taking care of their properties and then having animals. It's just a very rewarding thing, so.
What is your favorite part of what you do?
My favorite part?
Because you got a lot going on there.
I do, yeah.
You've got the growing side of things, which that's just kickstarted, hasn't it?
Yes, the garden is mostly in. I think we're just putting some final touches on it, but it's mostly in. And then from that, we're going to stem some other business ventures I'll announce soon.
Oh, gosh, is it on a cliff?
But yeah, that'll kickstart other ventures. And then, of course, the animals. And that's just a daily thing. But I love blessing people through that. Like, it really has been rewarding, although it is a shame to have supply chain issues, you know, and a lack of eggs at the store or whatever. Mm. But it has been neat to kind of get back to, like, people can come and they can see exactly what I'm doing with the chickens. I'm going to be very open and honest about what I'm feeding them, how we're taking care of them. And, like, especially little kids, that they get to come and go down. I'll let them hold a chicken and they'll get to go collect the eggs themselves. Sometimes that's not across the board the case, but I love that aspect about it, where they get really excited about knowing where their food is coming from. And for me, that's a very rewarding part. Like, I love it when you finally get to the point where chickens are laying. You know what I mean? You're like, it's the fruit of your labor, like every day going out and collecting that. And flowers in and of themselves on that side are very, very rewarding. You get, you know, sometimes these tiny little seeds that produce just massive plants, and they're just gorgeous. And then being able to take that beauty in and of itself and then put it into a bouquet and then make even more beautiful, just mixing colors and having fun that way. And so, of course, blessing people that way, they get to bring that beauty into their home, color into their home. And so I love just all of that put together.
That's awesome. Okay, so what do you find most rewarding about running your business? Which I feel like you kind of already touched on.
Yes. I do like to show the final product of bouquets. Like, you kind of... I like surprising people with it. That way, you know, you're kind of behind the scenes working on something. Or even if they know, and they'd be like, all right, it's finished. And just how you can see how people get excited about it. Like, I did an event one time and I did the flowers for it, and just seeing how people got excited about it and then being able to take the bouquets home, like, and bless people that way. And how, once again, kids will get excited about it, girls, and they'll be like, oh, I get to take this home. Like, that's really cool. So I like seeing people's faces light up when I show them something like that.
What is a common misconception people have about your business?
A common misconception? I think they think we're like homesteaders. You know, like the trendy homesteader you see on Instagram all the time.
Like, all natural idea.
I think that is, and I'm like, we're not really though. It's just our goal, dominion mandate people. Take dominion wisely, and then doing things as close to the way as God intended them to be done as possible, and eating things as close to the way as God intended them to be eaten as possible. Hence why we grow a lot of our own food. Why we make our own bread, you know, we mill our own wheat here. It's just, and part of it came through health issues of family members, but it's really put us on a good track towards, you know, doing things in a way that would bless our family and then honor the Lord. And then you know right where your food is coming from, you know what's gone into it, who's touched it. And, you know, we're not above eating boxed things from the store, but it's just all around, we feel better doing it that way. But yeah.
That's awesome. If you could have tea or coffee with any woman from history, who would it be and why?
Great question. Sacagawea.
Okay.
Yeah.
Explain yourself.
Okay. Well, she just seems like a totally different breed of woman. Like, So to meet up with Lewis and Clark, and somewhere in there, meeting up and joining wherever they were at the time, before they embarked, like being pregnant and then giving birth, the party leaves on ahead of her, and then she has the baby and then catches up to him. Like, you know, it's just, and then the work ethic to be on that journey with the baby and like just kind of, you know, blazing the trails through the wilderness of the Louisiana Territory. So it's just like, I would love to pick her brain about why she was the way she was. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's totally different from what you see today.
Right.
And so, yeah.
A different kind of breed of woman to do that.
Yes. And just as I, like, the mindset is so different, like going back to the work ethic, and it's not just like, now we're in an era where like we have paternity leave. And so it's not just that the women aren't coping, but the men aren't coping either. And like,
we're all just, we've all walked off the cliff.
We've taken a tumble still.
Not only are the women struggling, but the men are too, apparently.
Yeah. So
the birth was hard on the men.
Yeah.
As well as the women.
So I would love to get to see what she was like.
No, that's funny. It's interesting because, you know, you hear stories of, you know, mom will relate her birth stories, and then we've had other women around her age relate their birth stories with us. Yeah. And it's just super funny because it's like, you know, and I get there are really tragic situations giving birth. And so, and everybody has a different experience. But saying that, most people don't have a problem giving birth as far as, you know, what it could be, all the things that could go wrong giving birth.
Right.
And I feel like, especially women in our day and age, like around our age that are having babies now, just different things or close to our age that are relating their birth stories. And it's just so funny, the difference between, the generations.
Yeah.
And it's like, even there, it's like, now it's like, if you've given birth, you have an excuse for like a month to just lie around and do nothing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, come on.
And not only that, but your husband could join you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like the whole family gets to. Yeah. Such a tragic scenario. But, you know, it is, you're right. It's different because the breed of woman is just, the mindset is different. Yes. It wasn't like, you know, like you're saying with Sacagawea, it was just like, I've got to do what I need to do. And what I need to do is Lewis and Clark are going on this journey and I have to help them because I am the one that knows the lay of the land.
Right.
Like, right. I grew up around this land, and so I have to help them. And so it's like, yes, I just had a baby on my own, but I'm going to get up, and I'm going to go catch up with them.
Right.
And then I'm going to finish my mission, finish my journey.
Yeah. It's just a different mindset, work ethic. So
it really is. So what's a simple pleasure that brings you unexpected joy? So that could be like a sip of coffee, a noisy house, a quiet house.
Okay, the first sip of coffee in the morning. I have a couple I'm going to say.
Okay.
The first sip of coffee is extraordinary. And especially the coffee tastes better if you have a special mug. Like, I have a mug from Yorkshire, England, and it just tastes better in that mug.
So this is a point of contention between us because I haven't found that. And I think that idea is... A little crazy.
It's not crazy.
What difference does it make what mug it's in?
If you don't, it's a mug. Like a mug is a mug. As much the coffee doesn't taste as good.
Okay, so I would get it if you have like a paper cup, right,
yeah.
Or a plastic cup, and you're drinking a drink out of that versus an actual like china. That makes a difference because it's just the aesthetic. It's nicer.
Yeah,
but that doesn't make it taste different.
It does make it taste different.
It doesn't make it taste different.
It's better than a mug from Yorkshire.
Okay, so first sip of coffee. What's the other one? Maybe if you guys, let us know if you guys have found that, because this is a great debate, and I would love to know what you guys think, because maybe you guys, I don't know, maybe there are other people out there in the world that would agree with Lydia that it
Mother
depends on what...
Mother confers with me in my thoughts.
Yeah, I'll be the only one in this household that disagrees. I'm okay with that.
Okay. The other
one... But let us know. I'm sure people out there will give me support.
Yeah. All right. The other one is probably a bit nerdy, but, like, I love it when we move. We follow Joel Salatin's methods for moving animals and so to different paddocks. And so I love it when they finally get a fresh section of land to be on, like... And we move them every other day. They're coops within the section we've allotted to them. But I just love it when everything is entirely fresh and you can almost hear the silence come over them as you get them back and settled into their houses. And it's just like, they seem very happy. I'm very happy. Like, I love that.
No, there really is. It's really funny because you'll just stop and you just hear the beaks clipping the blades of grass. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you hear.
I love it.
They're not making a noise. They're just eating away.
I love it. So that brings me such pleasure.
If your life had a soundtrack, what would one song be on it?
Oh, great question. The Chapter by Gabby Barrett. I feel like that song just kind of all around encompasses where I'm at right now.
Which, I promise we listen to more than just Gabby Barrett.
Yes.
We do listen to other songs.
Other things,
but she just got some really good life ones.
Yes. She talks about, you know... kind of not, you're not a kid, but then you're also not all the way grown. And I feel like that's kind of the young adult phase I'm in. And then Blazing Trails and like Making a Mess though. And if like in a business mindset, you are, as you're, you know, taking on adventures, you're going to make a mess because life is messy sometimes, but then it's still yet beautiful. And then I also really enjoy the part where she talks about For My Grace, I Have Been Saved. So I feel like all around that song just encompasses my life right now.
That's awesome. That is a good song.
It is. It's very good.
What's a book, podcast, or quote that has really been shaping you lately?
Ooh, that's a good question, too. I have really been enjoying Pastor Toby Sumter's sermon series. I think it's called Glory Bearers.
Okay.
I believe it's the overall sermon series. And within it, he talks about the glory of manhood and the glory of womanhood. And then there are other sermons. Those are just the only two I've listened to so far. But especially in a time where we're, you know, there's so many differing opinions on, you know, what being a woman is, and like what are your tasks within that. So the way he paints the picture of, you know, the glory in the practical, and just even the first few lines of the sermon kind of stating what is a woman, it's just really been helpful. Especially, you know, when you're being told, like, you have either the feminist lie or the fact that, like, well, you're inferior, you're a worse sinner than men. Like, there's so many lies out there. I think he just does a great job of pulling from scripture what a woman is and what her task is.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, I love that.
So harping on that, I want to get to a specific question that I have regarding that mindset, specifically for women. So a lot of single women are being pushed to follow the ditch of feminism. So like just pursue a career. But then also there's the ditch of, it's kind of a weird mindset, but it has a mindset of if you aren't married, you're not being useful or fruitful. So you're not obeying the dominion mandate, like you were saying, Genesis 1:28, because that marriage is the ultimate. So you're right now, you're single.
Yes.
I'm single. And so how would you encourage women not to waste their season of singleness, but to use it with purpose and intention? And basically kind of, how would you, do you think, first of all, that if you're not married, you're not being useful or fruitful? If you want to use the exact terminology, you're not multiplying and you're not taking dominion. And so how would you combat that idea if you disagree, and how would you amplify that idea if you do agree?
I definitely disagree.
Okay.
I think this is a very faulty idea. So, like, first of all, the stage that we're in now is a training ground for marriage. Like, how I interact with my siblings is training how I'm going to interact when I'm married. And so I'm enjoying the training ground. I'm trying to learn all I can, because the task, if the Lord would have me to marry, I'd definitely desire to marry. It's definitely a weighty task, raising immortal souls, and it's not something to be taken lightly. And so I want to learn all I can now. And I think a lot of people honestly are just in love with the idea. Like, it's
romanticizing.
Yes. And they're not content now. So they think, like, we've kind of bought into the culture's lie of, like, all right, it's, you know, high school, college, marriage. Or, like, you know, trying to go anti the idea of, like, all right, career and then maybe marriage down the road. I think we're trying to kind of push, but we've almost pushed too far that, like, you're being holy if you're married. You know what I mean? Like, and then I think,
like, swinging the pendulum.
Yes.
It's way far to the right.
We've gone into the other ditch on the other side. And so we need to be in the middle, in the happy medium in the middle. And so, and I think that mindset also, too, really causes parents to, like, two things: either idolize their kids in a very weird way, where, like, they're living for the babies, or, like, they're so discontent, then they get flustered and frustrated with them, and then, like, do things they shouldn't, and so they don't have a right mindset of discipline, and also that's, Jesus wasn't married, and he had a very fruitful life. He took dominion, and if you think about this, our dad pointed this out in our Advent over Christmas. He does an Advent lesson with us every night.
It's so good.
He pointed out, because of Jesus' saving work on the cross, like, how he actually did, in a way, it's almost like he had kids. Like,
yep, because we're all his children.
Right, exactly. And so, because of his work on the cross, he did multiply in a way. And that was just kind of revolutionary. I thought, like, I'd never put that together. Like, I understood what it meant, his coming and then dying on the cross. But I just never thought about it in that way. So I'm like, you'd be calling Jesus a sinner if you believe that, and he's perfect. So, obviously, let's look at his life, what he did. He was very fruitful, and in a way, did multiply. And so, I just definitely think that's very, very faulty logic.
Well, then even, like, you look at Paul, and you're like, how many churches was he a part of?
Oh, my word.
You know what I mean? And it's like, he was definitely, like, even with Timothy, it was like, he was multiplying himself. And it doesn't have to be just because you have kids. Because then what do you do with the barren women?
Right. And then, too, like, I don't think the Lord would have created us that in the season of life where we're not married. It's like, well, you're sinning because you're not married. And it's like, and two, I think people make bad decisions about who they marry when they have that mindset, because it's like, well, I just have to hurry up and get married. And you're not being patient and waiting for the Lord's timing on that, and, like, not marrying your best friend, perhaps. And so,
right.
I think that takes us down a very wrong path.
That's where I think it's like, that's really good, because it's like, you know, you want to be marrying your best friend. You want to be marrying somebody who you deeply love and somebody that you can respect, because at the end of the day, there's going to be rough times in marriage, right? And so yeah. It's like, if you want to make that as easy as possible, and if you're already starting from the get-go with a Charlotte Lucas mentality of like, well, marriage is just entirely of chance, and it's better to know as little of the defects as possible of your partner before you enter into the marriage state. It's like, that's such a faulty logic, because it's like, you do have a choice in the matter. And so it's like, why would you just risk it and go out on a limb? Like, you're going to be with this person forever. And so it's like,
just be faithful now and trust the Lord's timing on it.
Yeah. Along with that, I wanted to read you something. It's a specific passage, and I can't take credit for tying all this together. I was reading a book. I believe it was Praise from the Gates.
Okay.
But it might have been Her Hand in Marriage. No, The Fruit of Her Hands by Nancy Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
And she was talking about barren women and how can they be fruitful. And so I want to read you this specific passage. It's 2 Peter.
All right.
Do it. 2 Peter 1.
Okay.
I'm going to start in verse 5.
All right.
So he's talking about precious and magnificent promises.
Okay.
Now, for this very reason also, applying all diligence in your faith, supply moral excellence, and in your moral excellence, knowledge, and in your knowledge, self-control, and in your self-control, perseverance, and in your perseverance, godliness, and in your godliness, brotherly kindness, and in your brotherly kindness, love. For if these things are yours and are increasing, they render you neither fruitless nor unuseful in the full knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Proof.
Boom.
I think you had read me that when you discovered that in the book. Mm-hmm. Isn't there some translations that even say barren nor unfruitful?
Yeah, that's the crazy part. It's like, there you go. That's obey today. Try to imitate Christ. Look at that list. See if your life exemplifies that. And just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because I remember even being really encouraged when I heard part of Gwen Newell's story.
Yeah.
And it was just, and I think it was on a Come Over for Dinner episode.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a great podcast if you guys haven't watched that or listened to that. She waited, obviously, until she found the right one. And it's not like we believe in the one guy.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something to be said for if you don't respect him and don't admire him and love him, and it's like you feel like he is your best friend,
mm-hmm.
then don't marry him.
Yeah.
Just as simple as that.
Yeah.
And trust the Lord's timing, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, you can have that tendency to panic because you're like, oh man, you know, I'm such and such an age and I've not found a spouse yet. And it's like, go be busy.
Yeah.
Right? Christ was obviously very, very busy. So it's like, go be busy, because the more busy that you are, the less and less time you have to think about it and mope.
And look past the end of your own nose.
Right. It's like, you're not just here to, marriage isn't something where you can just finally feel fulfilled, right? Yeah. Marriage is a sacrificial laying your life down daily.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you're discontent with your life now, you're going to be discontent with your life as soon as you're married. Can you share a time when life threw something ridiculous your way and you just had to laugh and roll with it?
Okay. Yes. Yes, I can. All right. So this has to do around Thanksgiving. Of Thanksgiving. It's actually the day before Thanksgiving. And we'll have to have Mom on to talk about Thanksgiving, because it's quite the event in the Edmonds household. So the day before, you had a project with a deadline. So we were like, we'll do some more of like the prep work, and then you can join us for like once you finish with the pies and the turkey and all the more fun stuff. So we're going to do some prep work. We must have had an event the night before, because we had the good china out.
Okay.
And so, we eat on very nice dishes, but it was just, you know, at an extra level of, you know, it's not like we eat on paper plates all the time, but it was just adding an extra level.
They were given to us, by a dear, dear friend. And so they come out, but they are specifically like Christmas china. And so they only make their appearance around
Christmas or
the holidays.
Thanksgiving, yeah. So, but they can't go in the dishwasher because they have the gold trim on the other side, outside. And so we were washing all those by hand. And I can't remember if it was just the six of us or if we also had other people that had joined us. Okay. But, you know, it has, like, the plates, the dessert plates, the teacup, the tea saucer, like, just many, many levels of dishes you had to wash. So Mom and I were just, you know, washing all those up and chatting it up. And, you know, we get to the end, and I look down, and there's water on the floor. And you know sometimes when you're washing dishes, you can accidentally miss the sink, and the water goes over the edge and onto the floor. But even Mom acknowledged later, like, that was just an insane amount of water for just missing the edge a couple of times. Like, I really had to really bad miss the mark on that. And we don't remember. I was like, I don't remember tossing water over the edge of the counter, but I guess I did. So I think one of us opened the cabinet below the sink, and come to find out, the entire time that we had been washing dishes, the pipe that connects the sink to the septic, into where all the pipes go out into the septic tank, had come off. And that whole time, water had just been coming out.
I'm still baffled that you guys didn't hear it, though.
We were chatting it up, so maybe we just, you know, we missed that. I don't know. But it had filled up. We have a bucket blower sink that has the cleaners and stuff mm-hmm. in it. And so it had filled that up, overflowed the bucket, had gone into the cabinet, and then come over the lip of the cabinet and onto the floor. And it was just quite the ordeal. Of course, you know, you spring into action. It's like, oh my word, we have to get this cleaned up because water would just, you know, not go well. And so,
which we've already had a whole fiasco with water in this house. So it's been more than just...
Yeah, this is an old house.
But yeah, no, it's funny. It's like every time you see water, it's like,
where did that come from? Like... And so, honestly, I think once we got it manageable, we just, you know, had a good laugh about it because it was just honestly, legitimately, like, so shocking. It was funny.
Like, I came down the steps, had no idea what was happening.
No.
And there was like fans running, and the cabinet was open, and there was like
towels.
Everything was out. And I was like, what just happened?
Like, it was,
what in the world? I left you here completely fine. I come back. Something apparently happened.
But we had Thanksgiving still, you know, mm-hmm. we got to make the pies without any trouble. So that was a good time.
That's funny. Yeah, we definitely say that's when you definitely have to roll with it.
Oh, just yeah.
Find the joy in it.
Yeah.
Because one thing that can make a situation worse is to
bad ass
slap a big tune on the top.
Yeah.
All right. So what's one skill that you think every woman, or one thing, doesn't have to be a skill, that you think every woman should try at least once?
One thing every woman should try at least once. Ooh, that's a great question. Yeah, I probably would suggest gardening if you can.
Of course you would. The gardener suggests gardening.
Yeah, it's just
a shocking, I think, answer.
More people would be shocked how much they enjoy it.
Yeah.
And two, how much it is a great activity to do with kids. Like, in a sense, like, Mom giving us the flower patch, it was, like, fun, but it also taught us responsibilities. Like, we have to go water it, too. And so, and then care for it. And then when the fruit, you know, of the flowers or vegetables, whatever comes in, just being able to take care of that, know what to do with it. And so I think it teaches responsibility for kids. And it honestly is a very fun, rewarding activity to do. So I would definitely suggest that.
Do you have any, like, okay, so say somebody has, like, I don't know, half an acre.
Yeah.
Right? Do you have any tips for them if they're like, I have no idea how to garden at all whatsoever? I've seen it. You know, mm-hmm. I've seen whatever it may be, the garden beds. I've seen the tower gardens, which I don't think technically counts as a garden, but
yeah,
it does. You know, and we all got to start somewhere. Yeah. So, what would you suggest? How would you suggest they start? And then is there like something that you would suggest they start with first? So okay. They're like, I don't know how to plant. What would I start with? And I get this will differ depending on their zones, but
yeah, I would say, it does depend on the stage of life you're in. So if you have lots of little kids, you know, it's going to affect perhaps, especially if you have a newborn, just how much you're able to do, because obviously you'd still want to faithfully take care of your kids. And so it's going to affect how much you would be able to do. But I think if you are in a state of able kids, go ahead and get the plants from Home Depot or Lowe's. Mm-hmm. You know, they have tomato plants out there ready to roll, pepper plants. Like, you could start there and just start with adding the care of it. You don't have to start it from seed, but then start with, you know, scheduling in the care of the plant. Learn how to do that very well. If you want something beautiful to grow that's just also fun for kids to see the whole process, like little toddlers, zinnias are super easy. Like, you can just, you know, go get some in the store, order some, whatever. And they're very easy to do, easy to maintain. And so if you want flowers like that, you can grow from seed, I would definitely suggest starting there. That's actually what got me started, sunflowers and zinnias. And so start small, learn how to take care of that faithfully, and from there, add in, all right, maybe this year we will try growing our tomato plants from seed all on our own instead but I don't think it's sinful to buy the ones from the store. You know, I prefer to do the whole process start to finish, but I also have a lot, that's my job, so I have the allotted time to do it. And so, but definitely start small and then learn to faithfully take care of it.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah.
If you could instantly master one skill, what would it be?
Oh, skilled master. Sewing. You probably like love that. Yeah.
I do like that answer.
The thing for sewing in me is I don't have any desire to learn it. And
ouch.
So, yeah, I just don't have a passion for sewing. Like, I feel like I should learn it because I feel like I should be able to, like, fix something that has a hole or make a tablecloth or curtains or napkins or stuff like that. But I just have no desire for no passion for sewing whatsoever.
That's baffling.
And so I feel like if I could just learn it like that, it would be easier because I know the process of learning it is going to be difficult because I don't desire to, other than I feel like I probably should. So if I could master it, it'd make things a whole lot easier.
Do you have any summer plans?
Do I have any? Are we going to learn how to make dark?
One-on-one, you'll be my first student. Oh, man. No, that's so funny.
Did you hear we're putting another garden in? So I'm all booked summer.
No, I didn't. All right. Is there a book that's had a major influence on you, either professionally or personally?
Yes. All right. In my younger years, it would be These Strange Ashes by Elizabeth Elliot. I believe that's what the book was called. And it was, at the time, a step up from just the biographies I was reading, but just her story of, you know, kind of getting into her journey with the translations and the Indians and all of that, and then being faced with so much hardship, losing years of her work in translations, and then being faced with so much death, and then from that, the embittered people, and just really, it kind of put life into perspective, you know, like, You read about tough situations in biographies, but then to really go in depth and detail, it was just a brilliant, brilliant book that really helped me out then. And then more recently, I would probably say Even Exile.
Like, that's a really good one.
It's just phenomenal. Rebecca Merkel does such a great job. And you know how, like, football coaches, when they give a speech and it's like the players then want to go run through a brick wall?
Yes.
The book is that for me. Like,
it really is. It's like, when you read it, you're like,
yes,
full steam ahead.
And she paints such a glorious picture. It's not necessarily like day in and day out do this, but it's kind of overarching mission and then how that's glorious and then kind of practically what our goal should be. And it's not like, you know, for Esther here, you do this, and then someone in Louisiana, you do this, you know, but it's just overarching goal, and then does a beautiful picture of painting that in such a glorifying way.
Yeah.
So,
which really is, I mean, she does do a great job. She has it so general, but then it's very practical and motivational.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, it's like, it's really interesting the way she wrote it, because it was like, you're right, without any specifics. And so it's like, now you take this and do what women are supposed to do, and you translate that to your everyday life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is really neat.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal book. If you have not read it, go read it. It's great.
What is one trend that you just can't get behind? And why? And this could be a fashion trend, a design trend.
Trend I just can't get behind.
Yep.
The ripped jeans.
Yeah.
First of all, practically speaking, like, I'm ashamed to say, I did the whole ripped jean phase. It didn't last very long, but I did try it. And it was just like, practically speaking, when you go to put them on, your foot goes through the hole.
Yep.
And it's just a difficult situation in and of themselves. And then, just like, if you can, for farmers, like, that is your working outside pair of pants. Like,
yep.
Who thought it was a good idea that we should all wear our work outside pair of pants to the store? Like,
yeah.
It's just, it's not flattering. And then the whole thing is strange and weird places. And it's like exposing the kneecap. And
it's like, who wants to look at your kneecap?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
nobody wants to look at your kneecap.
You know, like, what would make that pair of jeans better?
I like that.
All could see your kneecap.
Yeah. And it's like, you're an image bearer. Try harder. Like, really?
But it is just like, you know, if you have a hole in your clothes, it either needs to get mended.
Yes.
Or you need to save it for working outside.
Yeah.
Or it just needs to go in the garbage. It's as simple as that. You have three options.
Yeah.
One of those options is not to wear it.
Yeah.
For a special...
If you're like... If you're working on a painting project at home and that's the pair of pants you had on and you had to go get more paintbrushes, I'm not saying you have to change your outfit to go get paintbrushes.
Well, okay, but you can tell
which person is
using it as a style and which person is like, this is my work outside clothes.
Yeah.
Or my painting clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. I can't get behind it either.
Yeah, it's not for me.
It's just weird. Especially because I think we heard on a episode of What Have You,
mm-hmm.
and we heard where the originality of the ripped jeans stem from, and mm-hmm. then it was for sure like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
We are not doing that.
Yeah, it's not one I can get behind.
So, in our closing final question, so who have been two people, one for the chicken side of your business and one for the floral side that you feel like have really helped influence you to get to where you are now in your business?
Well, on the floral side, I have two. And then I still have one for the chickens. So,
oh.
But they're related. Not related as family, but they tie together. And so starting out would be Erin Benzikin, the founder of Florette Flower Farm. She was kind of revolutionary, I guess you'd say, for me in that aspect, because one Christmas we were in the house that we had renovated, and you and I got both of her books, both of her books, Cut Flower Garden and then A Year in Flowers, I believe is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, started flipping through those. We ordered seeds that spring and did a little flower patch, and it was beyond just, you know, the zinnias and sunflowers. And we didn't have great success, but that's just where we ended up putting the spot. But she's just a wealth of knowledge, you know, just, I think she really has a heart to want to help people, like, succeed and then do what she's doing, whether small or large scale. And so she's been super helpful. And then actually my mom discovered who taught her, I think it was through a podcast she heard this, Sarah Raven. She's in East Sussex, UK. And she is amazing, like her style, and she's a bit of like a environmentalist, climate change, you know, kind of person. But through that comes a lot of like organic farming methods that have been super helpful, because obviously the chickens are going to be right down from where I'm gardening, so I don't want to use a lot of harmful chemicals or, you know, bad practices, and obviously want to take Dominion well. And so she's been helpful in that area. And then also just kind of practical companion planting. And so, yeah, Florette learned from her. And it's funny how a lot of things kind of like click. You're like,
yeah,
oh, this makes a lot more sense now.
Yes.
And so, and she's also into the, like, the why behind farming, because I think she was like a doctor or something. So she's kind of into the technical side of it, which is also just a different perspective I love. And so those two would be super helpful. Sarah Raven has a lot of books. The One in particular would be a year full of flowers. That's been super helpful for me. And then on the farming side of things, it would be Joel Salatin. Mm. He, as you mentioned, I think I mentioned earlier, regenerative agriculture practices. Also, he also desires to take Dominion well. And he's the reason behind why we do a lot of things we do now, you know, how our operations with the chickens work, the chicken tractors. And so, super, super helpful. And he's, you know, Christian, funny, so also love supporting that and his work he's doing. So those would be the major influences.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You guys should go look it up if you have any desire to do either of those things.
Yeah.
Either farm animals or flowers.
Yeah. Very helpful people.
So where can people keep up with you? Because you're blowing and going. So where can people find all the knowledge about you?
Well, to start, it would be my Instagram and Facebook, Feathers and Florals Farmerette. And if you're looking on Facebook, you can look up under Lydia Edmonds.
Or if you have Siri, say it, the British Siri, it's
Feathers and Florals
Farmerette.
So on those two, and then obviously here on the podcast, we will be giving weekly updates on what's going on in our lives. So, yep, the Feminine Glory Podcast. Check us out on Instagram as well.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, Liz, thank you very much. Thanks for letting me question you.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it.
All right, guys. We will see you next time for the next episode of the Feminine Glory Podcast.
See you then.
Bye, guys.